Usha, the golden future, responses to disciples' questions given at the Usha Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 39.
Beloved Bhagwan, the other day I found myself upset, impatient, and irritable. When will I grow up? When will we all come to the responsibility of just being the you in us, that gracefulness that we all know ourselves to be? I feel that the time is ripe to stop whining about misery and misunderstanding, pain and discomfort. Could it be that, as a disciple, I simply take you and your presence, your answers, your insight, and your grace for granted as a way to avoid just stepping into myself, into the devotee?
सत्य धर्म इट इज नेचुरल टू बी इंपेशेंट and the great understanding and awareness is needed not to be impatient. Because impatience is not going to help. On the contrary, it is one of the great hindrances. You have to understand impatience as your enemy. You want the vast and the mysterious to open its doors without much effort on your part. It is not possible. There are thousands and one doors and only one is right, and you will have to knock on all the wrong doors to find the right one. Either in scientific research or in a spiritual seeking, patience is absolutely necessary. I am reminded of Edison, who invented the first electricity bulb. He worked for it for 3 years. All his colleagues and his disciples slowly left. They were impatient. They wanted to happen it immediately. And they could not believe the patience of Edison. Every day he will come fresh, young, excited, and when they said to him that we have experimented in so many ways and we have failed in every experiment, why not change the subject? We should work on something else. Edison said, "Who told you that we have been failures? Each failure brings us nearer to the success, because there must be only a limited door. We knock on one door and it is not the right door. It is not a failure. One door, wrong door, is eliminated. Success is closer. We knock another door. It is not the right door. We are more close to success. Two doors are eliminated. Soon we will be knocking on the right door. But the patience that he has is part of a very intelligent and very genuine seeker. After 3 years in the middle of the night, he knocked on the right door, and for the first time the human eyes, he was alone, all his colleagues have left, tired, exhausted, and utterly thinking him almost a madman. He was alone when he discovered the electric bulb. It has taken 3 years. day and night he was thinking only of one thing, from where to approach. And when the room was lighted with electricity, he was sitting there in utter wonder. He was the first man to see something which has never existed before. He could not take his eyes off the electric bulb. It was getting late, and finally his wife shouted from the other room that put that stupid light off. He was not aware that it is electricity. And come back and go to sleep. He said, it is not the stupid light you are acquainted with. It is my 3 years patience that has created it. You should come here and see. Because of his patience, he has a uniqueness in the whole history of man. He discovered 1,000 inventions, anybody else could have done it. But nobody had that quality of patience. There were many intelligent researchers, but they will go a little and will feel failure and start moving into another direction. Jalaluddin Rumi, one of the most important Sufi mystics, took one day his disciples to a nearby farm, where the farmers were trying to dig a well. They had made 8 holes and now they were working on the 9. Because they went only so far and seeing that there is no water, they dropped that project, started another place. They have destroyed the whole farm, and Jalaluddin Rumi had taken his disciples for the specific purpose to see how impatience is idiotic. If these people have put this whole energy that they have put in destroying the whole field with holes, on a single hole, they were bound to find water. But these are not the people who are going to find water. He was telling to his disciples that you should not be impatient. Put your total energy, your total trust, one-pointedly, arrowed towards one goal. And when the Master is with you, who has traveled the path up and down many times, and who knows that the path is going to lead you to your cherished dream, don't feel dejected, don't feel impatient, don't start again and again new projects. That way nobody has ever been able to find anything. You say the other day, I found myself upset. Impatient and irritable. Satya Dharma, you cannot find suddenly yourself upset, impatient and irritable. You must have been always impatient, upset and irritable. Perhaps the other day you come to a peak of realization. You realize these great qualities are in you, but they must have been there. They cannot come suddenly. You must have become accustomed of them. When will I grow up? What is the hurry? And what you are going by growing up? Even if you grow up today, what you will do? You will get even more upset and impatient and irritable. That my God, now there was a goal, even that is finished. Now my life is absolutely meaningless. Growing up comes by itself. You have to work, not directly on being how to grow up soon. You have to work more on meditation, more on silence, more on love. And the total result is the growth. The growth itself is not something separate. It It is the whole synthesis of all great qualities. And you have to work on those qualities in my childhood, and perhaps in India, in everybody's childhood. It must be happening. I used to put the mango seeds and my impatience was so much that I could not even sleep the whole night. I wanted to see what has happened in the whole night. In the morning, I will dig up again and see whether anything has happened or not. Nothing has happened. Because the mango seeds when two leaves start growing in it can be taken out and it makes a very good whistle. My interest was not in the mangoes, my interest was in getting more whistles. But even that makes impressions, just those two leaves. But impatience was such that even it was impossible to get those two leaves to grow up. Every morning I will dig up and see what is happening. And that will destroy the whole thing. Growth is something that happens by the side. You meditate, you sing, you dance, you rejoice. And suddenly one day you will find those two leaves of the mango are growing above the ground, so fresh, so beautiful. Growth is a finding on the margin. You cannot make it a goal. That's what is making you so upset, impatient and irritable. You have made growing up your goal. Now what can you do? Get stretched on a traction machine, when will we all come to the responsibility of just being the you in us, that gracefulness, that we all know ourselves to be. Any question about when shows that you have not understood my emphasis on the present moment. You have not understood my approach of here and now. Enjoy this moment and forget the last. And growth will come suddenly one day, not as a reward, but as a shadow of your living moment to moment joyously. When always takes you into the future. It always thinks of tomorrow. And the basic spiritual insight of thousands of years is that the tomorrow never comes. Your this very moment will become another moment. Your today will continue to remain today. The tomorrow will come in the form of today. But our whole system of thought is goal-oriented. We are always living in the future, and nobody can live in the future. Or we are living in the past, and nobody can live in the past either. The only way to live is to enjoy this moment, to cherish this moment, to make it as beautiful as possible. And out of this moment will come the next moment. Out of this moment will come your whole future. This moment contains the whole eternity, past and future. You are saying, I feel that the time is right to stop whining about misery and misunderstanding, pain and discomfort. Could it be that, as a disciple, I simply take you and your presence, your answers, your insight, and your grace for granted? Do you really feel, Satya Dharma, that the time is ripe to stop whining about misery and misunderstanding? And what you are doing in your question? What is this all about, being upset, impatient and irritable? And when will I grow up? If it is not whining, about misery and pain and discomfort, then what it is? You have not felt that the time is right. You have only thought. Thinking is of no help. Thinking is a cheat. It talks great things. It gives you big promises, but the goods are never delivered. Remember a clear-cut distinction between thinking and feeling. Those who are feeling the time is right are not whining about any misery. They are enjoying the right time. And by enjoying, they are making it more riper. Of course, this is true at least about you. That you have started taking my presence for granted. That is the natural habit of the mind. It starts taking for granted things which it will repent only when it has lost them. There is a beautiful Sufi story. A very rich man, super rich, became bored with life because he has known all the pleasures, all the joys that money can purchase. But it was not truly satisfying. He was still thirsty. He was still hungry for something authentic. He was inquiring sages and saints. And all that they could say, he had tried those rituals, worship, prayer, nothing worked. One saint, out of desperation, because this man was torturing him continuously again and again about his misery, that time is passing, that life is limited, and what kind of saint you are, you cannot show me the right path. and I have 24 hours to devote to it, I don't have to work to earn money or anything, I don't have children, and I have earned so much money that it is enough for 10 lives at least. He sent him to a Sufi master who was thought to be a little bit insane, and many sages were sending their disciples when they wanted to get rid of them. But that insane Sufi master only looked insane. He had a super senility. The rich man took a big bag, filled it with diamonds and rubies and emeralds and sapphires, and went to the Sufi. He was sitting under a tree, and he told his whole story. That he is very miserable. He has everything that the world can afford. I have brought just to give you a proof this whole bag of millions of worth. All I need is peace of mind. The Sufi said, I will give it to you. Get ready. The man thanked this man. Seems to be strange. I have been to so many saints. Nobody was so quick. And nobody promised to give it to me. They all said, go through this ritual, this worship, this prayer, this meditation. Work it out yourself. This is the only man. Perhaps they are right that he is insane. He is saying, get ready. Don't waste my time. So hesitatingly he said, okay, I am ready. But he was very afraid. Although he had come for peace of mind, and while he said he is ready, the Sufi master took hold of his bag and ran. It was a small village with a small street, and the Sufi was perfectly acquainted, and the rich man had never run, and he ran behind the Sufi master shouting that I have been cheated, that this man is not a sage, he is not insane, he is very cunning. But he could not get hold of him. He was going fast and giving him so many turns in the village. The old man was fat, huffing, buffing, perspiring, crying, and the whole crowd laughing, he could not understand why these people are laughing and nobody is helping. Because the village knew that that man is not insane, he is super sane. He has his own method. Finally, the rich man reached back to the same tree. The Sufi has reached far ahead. He was sitting with the bag there. And the rich man was shouting, abusing. He said, "Stop all this nonsense. Take this bag." He took the bag immediately. And the Sufi asked, "How are you feeling?" He said, "I'm feeling great peace." He said, "That's what I was telling you. If you are ready, I can give you peace immediately. Have you got it?" He said, "I haven't got it." Never ask anybody again about it. You have started taking for granted all your riches. I gave you a chance to lose them. And suddenly you became what you really are, a beggar. And these very precious stones which have lost their value to you are again precious. But it happens, the people who live in palaces start taking for granted those palaces. The people who are rich never think the miseries of poverty. The people who have got a master start taking him for granted that there is nothing to be done, only you have to ask the question. And your master is there who will answer it. But my answers cannot be of any help. My answers are only a provocation and an invitation, a challenge to work out through the misery and the darkness towards the dawn, towards light. I can show you the way. I cannot walk for you. And if you start me taking for granted, then don't be miserable. Take your misery also for granted. Accept it that you are a miserable person, that it is your destiny. You don't take your misery for granted, but you can take your master for granted. You don't take your problems for granted, but you take my answers for granted. You have to be clear, very clear, Satya Dharma. In your whole question, your last line is only true and authentic. As a way to avoid stepping into myself, I have started taking you for granted. It is a very easy way to ask a question, to get an answer, and out of the answer make few more questions for tomorrow, and you remain the same. My answers are remedies. They are medicinal. You have not just to create more questions out of them. You have to make an effort to live those answers. Out of living those answers, your questions will disappear. And my answers are simple. I am not requiring you to grow into some self-torturing saint. I am not asking you for any ascetic discipline. I am simply asking you to relax, to trust existence, to find few moments of silence and peace, which are absolutely available to everybody whoever closes his eyes, relaxes his body, sits silently, because the silence I am talking about is not some acquirement or achievement. It is a discovery. It is already within you. Just the mind has to be quiet so that you can hear the music of silence that surrounds your whole being, so that you can smell the fragrance of your being itself. And once you have known it, then you can repeat as many times in the day as you like, whenever you have time, even sitting in a train or in a bus. You can just close your eyes and move inward. It is only a question of taking the first step, then everything else becomes easy. But remember to be patient. A pull-up air cadet is taking his first sky diving jump. What happens if the parachute does not open? He asks his instructor. "Don't worry," replies the instructor, "there is only one chance in a thousand that it will happen, and you have a spare parachute too." "But," replies the anxious student, "what if that one does not open either?" "There is only one chance in a million that that will happen," the instructor assures him and adds, "and then the ambulance is there on the field to pick up the pieces." The nervous cadet boards the plane, which takes off. At 10,000 feet, he jumps out of the plane and pulls the cord of his main parachute. It does not open. "Shit," he says, and then pulls the cord of his reserve chute, which also refuses to open. "I knew it," he says to himself, "and I bet with my luck the ambulance won't be there to pick up the pieces either." Just don't be so miserable. Most probably the first parachute will do. If everything goes wrong, then even with your luck, you will find the ambulance to collect the pieces.
Beloved Bhagwan, Michael, the typing Patrick, checked to see that his car indicators were working. He put his head out of the window and yelled, "Yes, Patrick, they are." "No, they're not." "Yes, they are." "No, we're not." "Bhagwan, no, I'm not." "Yes, I am." "No, I'm not." "Yes, I am." Recently, I've noticed those spaces in between, and now they seem to be coming more and more in every way. One advertisement for beer claims to reach the parts that other beers can't. Parts of me that just a few weeks ago I didn't know existed are beginning to feel spacious, light, and grateful. I am beginning to feel the flow and the pace of existence, to relax into it and to trust it. Will you please comment?
Sagar the workings of the mind are just like that, split between yes and no, between to be or not to be. The mind cannot have one why. It is always balanced by its against why. That is simply the nature of the mind. It is split. It is schizophrenic. In a more philosophical way, they call it, is dialectical. But my whole teaching is to go beyond the mind, not to be bothered with it. Neither its no is of any meaning, nor even its yes. The only use of the mind is to use it as a stepping stone, to go beyond it. Don't try to solve problems of the mind. They are insoluble. And you will get into a thick forest and will find it almost impossible to find the way back home. The mind is a puller. how do you make a one arm pull-up fall off a flagpole? Answer, you wave to him. Why did the Polish government import 500 million tons of sand from Saudi Arabia? Answer, they want to drill for their own oil. Did you hear about the Polish lesbian? Answer, she likes men. The mind is certainly part of Poland. One contemporary logician has invented a word, po. And my suspicions are that he has taken that word po from Poland. Otherwise there is no way how he could manage the word po. And he has invented it because his philosophy needed it. He says that Aristotle has given us a philosophy of yes and no. Either something is right or something is wrong. Either something is black or white. A very simple duality. Either you believe in God or you don't. But what about things when the real answer is neither yes nor no? For example, God. To say yes is wrong because you have not experienced. To say no is wrong because you have not explored. So neither yes is applicable nor no. So according to his logic, when somebody asks you what about God, you have to say po. Po is non-committal. It does not mean yes, it does not mean no. It simply means I don't know. But rather than accepting the ignorance, it gives you a good feeling by saying so. You put in fact the other person in a state of ignorance, because he cannot understand what is so. He has never heard the word. My suspicion is that this po he has got from Poland. There is no other way to get it. But even with po, mind will not be the solution. You can go on repeating po, you will remain as poor, as ignorant, as miserable as before. This poor is not going to transform anything in you. Only one thing can transform, and that is going beyond the mind. Going beyond thinking and coming to a space where the sky is absolutely without clouds. And then no question arises and no answer is needed. People think that perhaps Gautam Buddha, Mahavira, Zarathustra or Lao Tzu have found the answer. They are wrong. They have lost both the question and the answer. They have found a silence undisturbed either by questions or by answers. When I said this to Buddhist Tibetan Lamas, they were shocked because they were thinking Gautam Buddha has found the answer. I said, if you find the answer, you are still inside the mind. You are still very close to the question. Gautam Buddha has gone beyond the question and the answer. He has found silence. Indestructible. Philosophy finds answers. Religion finds a state which is far beyond questions and answers. Questions and answers look childish, look like toys to play with. Ten years ago, an anthropology student spent some time studying rural regions of Kashmir. One day he was driving down the road when he saw a man on a donkey while his wife walked 10 yards behind him. Why do you do that? He asked. It is our age-old tradition, the man replied. Recently the student, now a reporter, was sent back to Kashmir by his newspaper. By a strange coincidence, he found himself on the same road with the same man he had seen 10 years before, but this time his wife was walking 10 yards ahead of him. The man on the donkey was behind the wife exactly 10 yards. What happened to the custom, to the traditional custom? Ask the reporter, has the tradition changed? No, babe, said the man, the tradition has not changed, but now, you see, there are landmines. Mind is very cunning. It will use traditions, it will use religions, it will use philosophy. Just to survive. It will give you all kinds of questions and all kinds of answers just to survive. But any question raised by the mind is as futile as any answer found by the mind. Mind is an exercise in utter futility. Only very few people in the world have been able to find the truth that the mind is our only problem. If we can go beyond mind into silence, into utter and profound silence, undisturbed by anything, not even a ripple of thought, then we have found it. Not the answer, but something existential, a transformation, a mutation, a revolution in ourselves, which destroys all questions and all answers, and leaves us into utter serenity, in a tremendous beatitude. Meditation is nothing but annihilation of the mind. Meditation is not the training of the mind. Meditation is simply cessation of the mind. Just cease to be a mind, and you will find a pure being, unpolluted, and pure from eternity to eternity. little Arnie was always saying things that got him into trouble. One day his mother was having a friend to lunch who was bringing her new baby who had no ears. Arnie's mother called him and said, "Arnie, you don't say anything about the baby. In fact, don't even speak at all." "Okay," said Arnie. The friend arrived with her baby. Arnie looked at him, took his hand and said, "What beautiful little hands he has." Arnie warned his mother, "And what beautiful brown hair he has." "Yes," said the proud friend. "Has he got good eyesight?" asked Arnie. Arnie asked his mother, "Why?" asked the baby's mother. "Because," says Arnie, "he will never be able to wear glasses." The mind is so cunning, it goes on roundabout, but comes finally to some trouble, to some problem. You can repress its one question by one answer, it will create new questions which will be nothing but echoes of the repressed question. A seeker of truth is a seeker of the beyond. The beyond is our home. The mind can be Christian, Hindu, Mohammedan. The beyond is just yours, without any adjective. And to me, the future man, the new man, will live in the beyond. Living in the beyond does not mean that you cannot use your mind. In fact, on the contrary, only those who live in the beyond are capable to use their mind as an instrument. Those who have not moved into the beyond, mind goes on torturing them. It is a nightmare. And they cannot use the mind because they are not aware of it. Be a witness to the mind. In your witnessing, the beyond will open its door. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Prabhupada.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.